Blog Talk Radio.
And hello, everybody, and welcome to another edition of the Going Old School Show, live on blogtalkradio.com. John and Joe here for you, Wednesday, December 28, 2022, 7 o'clock p.m. Eastern Time here on the East Coast. But what we do each and every week on the Going Old School on this hump day here, we will go out to Arizona to talk all things football. He covers the Cardinals and the NFL. For PHNX, he is a Hall of Fame selector as well, amongst other things. On Twitter, at HBalzer721, he is Howard Balzer. Howard, John and Joe here for you in the Northeast. How are you doing, sir? Thanks for your time once again.
I'm doing well and always appreciate giving you guys my time. Hope that everyone had a great Christmas weekend and now look forward to a New Year's weekend and the calendar turning on another page. Heading to 2023. I'll tell you, it always reminds me of a great thing that Warren Sapp once said in an interview that I was doing with him with Joe Hargan in Canton one summer. And it had been about 7 years, 6 or 7 years since he had been enshrined in the Hall of Fame. And so I said to him, boy, 7 years, Warren, that's incredible. Time really flies, doesn't it? And so he chuckled and he said, well, I've always said that days drag, years fly, and decades zoom. And we laughed a little bit when he said that, but then the more you think about it, you say, man, he's absolutely correct. And what was interesting, too, is Warren was with Joe and I on the Pro Football Hall of Fame radio show on Sirius that we taped yesterday, which I'm going to get into in a moment a little more, that will air later tonight at 10 p.m. Eastern on Sirius, and he was on. And the crazy part was that when I was looking up, you know, little notes on him before the show, I always look at a guy's birthday. You know, when was he born? You know, maybe his birthday's around the time of the show and all that. And all of a sudden I look, and he was born 50 years ago on December 19th, 4 days before the Immaculate Reception. And so when he came on, I asked him, and I said, you know, you've always said the decade zoom, and I guess you must be feeling it now after turning 50. And he kind of laughed, and I said, but your birthday was a little more than a week ago, 4 days before the Immaculate Reception. So I said to him, what do you remember about that catch? And boy, I couldn't believe it. He couldn't remember it. He said, I don't remember anything. Well, of course, he was 4 days old. But it's still pretty amazing that, you know, here we are, you know, heading towards another year. And, but man, they do zoom, guys. I don't think there's any doubt about it. Those decades zoom.
They do zoom, Howard. And let's just start off with that Immaculate Reception. We talked about it last week leading up to the game. Boy, you talk about emotion. That was filled with it. And I couldn't help but think of the game-winning drive, Kenny Pickett, George Pickens, and what those two kids coming in as rookies saw, not only with the love affair with the fans, they got a glimpse into the history, all encapsulated in one night. I knew they knew about it, but that lesson they learned about that great organization known as the Pittsburgh Steelers, man, they matured a heck of a lot for two kids in their first year in the NFL. Your thoughts on that?
It's a great point. And I think a lot of people forget or don't realize that in that Immaculate Reception game 50 years ago, Franco Harris was a rookie. Now, granted, by the time the playoffs are rolling around, you know, a lot of coaches will say, well, those guys aren't rookies anymore. But it still is their first season, and it still is their first playoff game. And so that was his game, his first playoff game as a rookie, and to become part of history the way he did. And then that whole emotion of that night, it was just hard to imagine. I'm sure whatever it was, 60,000 people there, probably in 5 or 10 years, there'll probably be a million people claiming they were at the game. Yeah. But yeah, those two guys definitely grew up, and it was almost ordained to be that in a game where the Steelers didn't play that well and the offense wasn't doing a whole lot, And all of a sudden they came up, they come up with the game-winning drive to not only pull it out, but, you know, stay alive in the playoffs. And now they're going to be featured on Sunday Night Football, you know, a week after being on Saturday Night Football on Christmas Eve. And now they're going to be on Sunday Night Football with the game being flexed against the Ravens. So, yeah, it's to be a Steeler, I think all these guys feel that. They feel the weight of history all the time. I mean, you know, here we are. We had, another coach, you know, lose his job, and there's been three this year. And here's the Steelers, a team that has had, and every time I say it, you almost have to repeat it to say, yeah, that's really true. Three head coaches since 1969. I mean, it's just crazy to think that that's what this organization is all about. And every other team in the league, sees it, right? And they see what happens when you have stability. But boy, you know, hire a coach, have a bad year, okay, we've got to change, obviously, and that's what the Broncos did, and we'll see what they come up with going forward. But man, this Cardinals team where I am, I mean, they've had, since they moved to Arizona, which was in 1988, so that was a number of years ago, certainly 34 years, but they've had 10 head coaches in 34 years. You know, figure it out. That's an average of a coach every, you know, a little over every three seasons. And Don Coryell, this is an amazing stat. Don Coryell, who was the Cardinals coach for 5 years when they were back in St. Louis and had a great run, but then it went bad the last year with defensive injuries and a lot of stuff, and Don Coryell ends up leaving the organization. Right now, guys, he has 42 wins. Don Coryell had 42 wins in his five seasons with the Cardinals. That is still the third most wins of any coach in the franchise's history. Wow. And they've been around for over 100 years. So that's pretty, pretty incredible. But, you know, all these teams know what the Steelers are – what they're doing, but they can't help themselves, and they're constantly changing, hoping they find that next guy who's going to be the answer. And sometimes it happens, but you know, most of the time it doesn't. And you just get into that roller coaster, that merry-go-round of changing the coach every two or three years. It's pretty crazy to me the way it happens in the NFL.
Howard, let's follow up with a team that you cover for the PHNX. .com, and that is the Arizona Cardinals. I'm watching the game the other night, Cardinals, Buccaneers, Tom Brady driving the Buccaneers to the game-winning field goal in overtime when the broadcast panned over, put a shot on head coach Cliff Kingsbury, who had a look of defeat on his face, eyes staring down to the ground. And to me, at least what I was thinking, I couldn't wait to talk to you because we talk about microcosms on the show. That was pretty much a microcosm of the whole season. If you could have a postseason media guide and put that snapshot of it to tell what the season was like, that's the one I would put there. Your thoughts on Kingsbury and what's turned out to be this season.
Yeah, I did see some shots of that. And after the game, it was, you know, he spoke to the media, and then we all head into the locker room, and there's not that many players at that point, but there's a few of them. And all of a sudden, Cliff Kingsbury comes walking into the locker room and takes a deep breath, and he went to talk to somebody and then left quickly. But it was, you know, it was just a strange sight. But then this week, talking to the media Monday, talking to the media today, he looks, you know, more energized, looks, you know, ready to take on the battle of the last 2 weeks last 2 weeks of the season. And so, but during the games, I mean, it's, you know, obviously, all these coaches, all these guys associated with the NFL put in an incredible number. You know, I always laugh at this, guys, as I digress for a moment. When a game is over and a team loses, and the craziest thing that I always hear is when there'll be a fan or somebody will say, well, they weren't prepared to play. And I'm going, and it's like no one realizes the hours and the amount of time that is put in by all these players and the coaches to prepare for a game. And just because you lose and you didn't look great doing it, or you got outplayed, or you had mistakes, or whatever it might be, to say that a team wasn't prepared to play, to me is, you know, is I don't know. I just have a real issue with that. And so, you know, Kingsbury, like everybody, I mean, they're trying their best. Obviously, everyone's trying their best in what's been a bad season. But like you said, the microcosm of this year where every day almost it seems, you know, there's something. I mean, Monday rolls around, and in typical Cardinals fashion, after Cliff Kingsbury spoke to the media and then did his 10 or 12 minute radio interview with the team's you know, affiliate, within seconds of his interview being done comes the national report that safety Buda Baker is out for the season with a fractured shoulder, and no one even knew he was hurt. Well, when I say no one, I mean nobody in the outside knew he was hurt, much less that he had a fractured shoulder and was done for the year. And Kingsbury certainly didn't volunteer it, which he never does. But obviously he knew at that point. And there's another, I mean, there's a guy who's their one Pro Bowl player, a guy who played all 81 snaps in that game on Sunday night against the Buccaneers. And now he's lost for the season. And then Tuesday, everyone wakes up to the news that J.J. Watt decides to go on Twitter and announce to the world that, you know, yesterday with a picture of him with his little his son who was born in October, and his wife and his family was in another picture right after the game on the sideline, and saying that was my last NFL home game, and never used the word retire, but it was obvious what he was talking about. And so it doesn't mean that that's going to affect, you know, it's not going to affect him. He's going to go out there because he's had an amazing season at the age of 33. But just another thing that happened to this team in what has been the ultimate soap opera on the field, off the field, whatever it might be. And I'm sure it's, you know, it's a weight. You know, it's a weight on the players. It's a weight on a coach, on all coaches, because it's, you know, it's, you know, and I asked JJ today, he spoke to the media after the open locker room, and he said on Hard Knocks a couple of weeks ago, as you get older into your career and you've been around for a while, it really hits you even more just how hard it is to win in the National Football League. And of course, when you're not winning, it becomes even more of a grind to just go out there and still put the blood, sweat, and tears and all the passion to get ready for a game, especially when you're in that position where you're not going to be in the postseason. And he said, yeah, he said that it's tough. It's hard. It's my one regret that I'm never going to be able to say I was a champion, at least in terms of being on a Lombardi Trophy winning team. But he's a champion, obviously, in a lot of other ways. But he was never on great, great teams. And so they all feel that. And Kingsbury was asked about that also, what JJ had said. And he says, hey, that's the NFL. And you just go at it, you keep at it, and you just hope that it turns one week and you can get a win. But it is hard to win a game. You always hear coaches say, it is hard to win a game in the NFL. And that's never more true with teams that don't win too many during a season.
So, Howard, seeing that you've seen JJ Watt play quite a bit, would you consider him, when the time is up, to be a first-time ballot Hall of Famer? Would he be considered that? Should he be considered that?
I think he should be considered. I know a lot of people put out there automatic first ballot guy, and I have a sense that he probably will be. But, you know, the one thing you never know, and I know it from being in that room, this will be, you know, the 20th year, the 20th voting meeting that I'll be a part of, you know, next month. You never know what other guys, aside from the other, let's just assume he will be a finalist. Okay. I think that's fairly safe to say that he will be one of the 15 finalists. So aside from the other 14 guys, how many other, you know, guys who have put up tremendous numbers as pass rushers will there be? I mean, you know, we had, you know, last DeMarcus Ware was a first time eligible, did not get in. Dwight Freeney is a first-time eligible this year. Jared Allen is another guy. I think if he becomes a finalist this year. And by the way, those finalists will be announced on Tuesday on NFL Network at 8 p.m. Eastern Time. I think that if he's a finalist, this will be his third year, I believe, as a finalist. So how many of those pass rushers will be there when he comes up? The thing that to me separates JJ somewhat from some of those other guys, and, you know, Jared Allen in some ways was a little similar, but JJ Watt isn't one of those athletic freaks that just wins the pass rush against a blocker with great moves, you know, tremendous speed, and a lot of times gets sacks just because he's able to blow by a blocker. That's not JJ Watt. I mean, JJ Watt does it with all the technique that he's learned, with not taking a play off, with, you know, all the different things that he has at his disposal to right now have piled up 111 and a half sacks in his career. And those were on teams a lot of times that, you know, weren't winning a lot, and weren't ahead in a lot of games. So I think that makes him somewhat different because he can play the run, he can do, you know, all those other things. So I think he's got a real good shot. I will never say it's automatic, absolute, but yeah, I think he will definitely should be considered, and very well could be a first time Pro Football Hall of Famer. I think there'll be a lot of people probably surprised if he isn't. I mean, remember, you know, real quick. I mean, real quick. You know, he won Defensive Player of the Year three times, and maybe a knock will be the years of injuries that he had. Because you sit there and you go, "Wow, man, if he hadn't had those injuries, just imagine what his numbers would be." But man, those numbers are pretty incredible, even with the games that he has missed with injury.
Howard Balzer joins us here on the Going Old School show on Twitter at HBalzer721. Howard, speaking about J.J. Watt, I mean, his on-the-field performances, what he did from 2012 to 2015, 4 years he averaged over a sack a game. But what I and a lot of people remember, if you didn't see him on the field, we all know him for what he did following the devastation that Hurricane Harvey left in Houston several years ago. I think what that did with his persona, and opening his living room, we all saw what kind of heart this guy had. It just went above and beyond anything that he ever did on the gridiron. I think that speaks volumes as to what type of guy he is. And those are some things that we're all going to remember what he did in relation to what he did on the field. And your thoughts on what he's meant to the community there in Houston.
No question. It's just amazing, you know, the things that he has done, giving back. And like you said, there's the Hurricane Harvey time, but there was more, and he was busy with that. He was doing stuff with that as the season was getting ready to start. And there was one week, it was the first week of the season, and he was meeting with people and doing this and doing that to get this fun going and all that. And he's going, man, I got a game to prepare for. But he still didn't cut back on the media appearances and all those things. And so that was the pattern. He talked about it today, that just the day after day, week after week, with the way he had to approach it to play at the highest level possible. And I think one of the things, in the type of season he's had this year with 9.5 sacks and piling up tackles for loss in the running game, I mean, this was a guy that a year ago in October, 14 months ago, shredded his shoulder in a game, ironically enough, against the Texans, his former team. And his shoulder was just shredded. We didn't know on the outside how bad that injury was. Missed the end of the regular season, but somehow, in the next, you know, a little over 2 months, he was able to get in good enough shape to come back and play in the Cardinals playoff game. And he wasn't great in that game. Of course, nobody was for the Cardinals. But he came back and played, which was pretty phenomenal. But the crazy part was, a few days later, after that game, he was right back in the team facility, knowing how much work he had to do to be physically ready for this season. And he attacked it like crazy. And in fact, one of his teammates, the young defensive end, Zach Allen, who's hurt now, is in his fourth season. He played last season, guys. Zach Allen did the last 4 or 5 weeks on a really bad ankle. Had a bad ankle injury, but he was still out there playing a lot of snaps. And so he credited J.J. Watt for how he was able to come back from his injury. So he said, I would go into the facility, and there was J.J. having just finished his 11th NFL season, working like a fiend to be ready. And that motivated me. And he said, with the way I worked in the off season, I cut a 7 or an 8 month rehab period to like 4 or 5 months and got him ready to be playing at a pretty high level when the season started. So that aspect of J.J. Watt and the impact that he has had on other players, either by what he says to them, by what he does and teammates can see, especially younger players, it's almost immeasurable how much he has meant to his teammates over the years.
So, Howard, you said they, put Buda Baker on the injury reserve Monday. Now, during the game, because I watched some of the game, but I didn't notice that he had gone off the field injured. When was he injured in that game?
No one knew. And Cliff Kingsbury was asked about it today. He was a little vague. He said it wasn't early, but it wasn't late, something like that. So I'm not even sure if Buda's told anybody. I mean, because they were just thinking, it's just a little bruise, no big deal. And then they find out the next day it's a fractured shoulder. And so, but it probably happened somewhere, about midway through the game. And so, we won't know, when it did. But, it's just another thing that happened, team. And now they'll be without him for the last two games. And, their secondary's beat up. Their offensive line still is. I mean, their right tackle, Kelvin Beachum, who is the only player to start every game. He was just playing on guile after injuring his knee in the game the week before when he collided actually with Colt McCoy, when Colt McCoy suffered his concussion and he had an injury to his knee and his ankle. And yet he got out there against the Bucs and played every snap. And so when Kingsbury was asked today, how's he feeling this week? And Kingsbury said, pretty much the same way as he felt last week, which means he won't be. And I asked him last week, that you came back, because in that game against Denver, when he got hurt, he came back in the game. And he said, what was that like? And he says, all I'll say is it wasn't pretty. He says, but I got through it. And so that's, I think a lot of times we don't realize what a lot of these guys go through, not only go through, but then what they play with. Just to be out there. And some will say, they're playing for their job. They're playing for this. They're playing for that. And yeah, there's a certain part of that. But they're also playing because that's their job. That's what they're supposed to do. And when you have injuries and you know that, Marco Wilson, for example, mm-hmm. a lot of people didn't realize, that he had left the game. He didn't play the week before because of a stinger in his neck. And anybody who's even had a little twinge in their neck knows how tough that can be. Just to walk and sit, much less play football. Well, he missed the game the week before, then started and played against the Bucs, had two interceptions of Tom Brady, and then re-injured it, had a aggravated the stinger, believed to be on a tackle of Leonard Fournette on a reception in one of the drives that led to a Bucs touchdown late. And he missed the last 22 snaps of the game, which was when Tom Brady and company went down the field and overcame that 10-point deficit to tie the game and then win in overtime. He wasn't out there. And so, once again, another case of one of their better players and one of their growing and improving pass defenders, couldn't be there, wasn't able to be on the field at a crucial part of the game.
Sure, it's not the Coyotes and not the Cardinals, because it sounds like what hockey players would do. Seems like these guys are tough. Nails on the football field.
Yeah, I mean, there's no doubt, no doubt about it. And that's, Billy Price, who has been the center since week five, I think. No, I'm sorry. Someone else started, and he got signed off the Raiders practice squad and started for the first time in week 7 at center because Rodney Hudson has been out since week 5. And I saw him leave the locker room Sunday after the game with his knee wrapped with what appeared to be ice. I figured, he hurt his knee. He didn't miss a snap, though. He played 81 snaps. And today, it was a walkthrough, but if he had practiced, he would have been limited with the knee injury. But I'm sure he'll be out there. Now, yeah, there's a guy who's on a one-year contract. Contract expires in March. And certainly he's trying to show what he can do. But still, to go out there injured and know that you might injure it worse is, something guys do, quite a bit of time. And so they certainly had, a bunch of that throughout the entire season.
Hall of Fame selector Howard Balzer joins us here on the Going Old School show. Joe and John here for you. Howard, you mentioned Denver firing Nathaniel Hackett on Monday. I just had to stop and think about this, and it got me a little – just it makes you wonder. I think it's the worst-kept secret in all of football, arguably, that he was going to have – he was not going to be the coach after the season going into next year, number one. Number two is the organization waited till they were embarrassed on national television the next day to fire him and basically point the finger and say, okay, world, you saw what we're like on TV. This is why we're doing it. We're getting rid of our coach. I thought that was just a bad object for an organization that has really taken some hits.
No, you're 100% right. And, of course, they tried to say, well, it wasn't about this game. It was everything that had, happened before that. Well, it's two more games. Let them coach it out. I mean, this is a team that has fought. They've played hard. They've obviously haven't won many games, but they've, played some close losses. The defense has played pretty well. That was their worst performance. There's no doubt. There's no doubt about it. That happens, in the NFL sometimes. But it's kind of interesting that it was with Russell Wilson returning to the lineup and how bad he was in the game, and certainly that contributed to the way they lost. And so, I definitely wonder, had the ownership not changed, would they be making this switch? I mean, Russell Wilson came out today and said, I feel horrible. He says, because Nathaniel Hackett, I feel I let him down. I did not play well. And the guy's a great guy. He's a great coach. He worked his butt off to try to make this right. But it didn't work, obviously, for 1 year. But when the look is that bad overall, and boy, the injuries they've had, I mean, they've got 19 guys. They're tied with Tennessee. I mean, it's no secret. I've talked about it during the year. But, there's no secret. When you have that many injuries, your team is going to be affected. Tennessee has 19 guys on injury reserve, and now they're playing a rookie quarterback because Ryan Tannehill is hurt. And all of a sudden, the team that was, 7-3 and in control of the division is now in danger of not making the playoffs and has lost 5 games in a row. And I actually saw someone list somewhere as Mike Vrabel as a coach on the hot seat. They've already fired their general manager. And now all of a sudden you're going to blame this on the head coach. I mean, who's a darn good head coach when things happen beyond your control. And most of the time, that's what the NFL is. A lot of things happen beyond the control of the head coach and the other coaches and the players for that. For the players sometimes, but most of the time, someone asked Colt McCoy today with the Cardinals, have you ever been on a team that's had this many injuries, and especially on the offensive line? He said no, and he says so. What is it about this season? And he said, well, it's a lack of execution, which it normally is, but when you're playing, let's say of 22 starters, when you're playing 11 backups, which is what the Cardinals are doing. I mean, Tennessee played last week with 6 backups on defense. When you're playing with that many backups, guess what? That's going to lead to more execution problems because those guys aren't most of the time guys are backups for a reason. And yet most of the time no one wants to acknowledge it, so they put the coach on the hot seat. And that's the way it is. That's never going to change. But I think it shows a total lack of perspective on what happens in games and again how tough it is to win in the NFL. I mean, look at these teams right now. That there's 9 teams, guys, in the NFL that are 7-8, right? Yep. And a whole bunch of them are still alive in the playoffs. And looking at the Cardinals, for example, they've won 4. So as bad as this season has been, they've only won 3 games less than all those 7-8 teams. And I believe the Cardinals are 2-5 or 2-6 in one score game. Right? And so, hey, win a couple more of those, and you'd have 6 now. And all of a sudden, it wouldn't look as bad. But that's what makes the difference, in this league. Look at Minnesota, 11-0. I think every week it seems to go up, the number. 11-0 in one score game. And here's the amazing thing about the Vikings. And I saw this stat this week. with the win last week against the Giants, they have now won 8 games. That's 8 of their 12 games that they've won. They've won 8 games after being behind in the fourth quarter.
Jeez.
That's only the second time in history, guys, that's happened. Second time in history. And the crazy time, the only time it happened was 2016 and the Detroit Lions. And when I saw that note, I said, yeah, I kind of remember that year when Matthew Stafford was bringing that team from behind like week after week.
Yeah.
And they only won 9 all season, but 8 of them were coming from behind in the fourth quarter. But they made the playoffs with Jim Caldwell, the same Jim Caldwell that in 4 years with the Lions won 36 games and had an over 500 record and was fired. And what have they done since then? You know, looking better this year, certainly, but what have they done since he got fired? So, you know, those are the decisions that owners make with, I don't think, a lot of knowledge sometimes.
So, Howard, my final question is, speaking of organizations possibly on a hot seat, would be Miami with the Tua situation.
Well,
what could be done and what can be done with the concussion protocol or spot is to help guys like this, Tua, who was obviously had a couple of bad concussions and then had the concussion this week.
Yeah. You know, I think we talked about it earlier in the year when all that stuff happened with Tua in the 2 games in a row. And it's pretty, you know, but I think it is one reality is, it's just because you hit your head on the ground doesn't mean that you can feel anything right away. And there are many times that concussion symptoms don't show up for 24 hours. But I guess, you know, the feeling is that no one saw his head hit the ground. You would think that he realized his head hit the ground. But if he didn't feel anything from it, I mean, you know, guys hit their head on the ground all the time. You can't be removing players from the field every time their head hits the ground. Now, granted, with him, it's a little different because he had the concussions earlier. But if you truly aren't feeling anything from it, you're obviously not going to tell anybody. And if no one sees it and then doesn't see that, quote, gross motor instability, which will take a guy off the field, then you're figuring, okay, yeah, he hit the ground, but no biggie, no problem. And so I think beyond what they're doing, I mean, obviously you want more vigilant spotters and you want players self-reporting as much as possible, but you're going to miss some. I think that's the reality. It's unfortunate to say, but some are going to be missed some, especially if the player doesn't show any, you know, anything from it and just hit their, I mean, look at the helmet to helmet hits. I mean, you talk about a head hitting the ground. Look at the helmet to helmet hits, some of them that are legal. You just take both guys off the field if there's a helmet-to-helmet hit because of something that might happen. I mean, it's a fine line there, and I think that's, you know, NFL gets criticized a lot, you know, for the situations, but I think, you know, sometimes they're just unavoidable.
Howard Balls joins us. Howard, my final question as well, and we're talking about young quarterbacks who make instant, you know, have instant success in the NFL. Two of the three of the recent memory, Patrick Mahomes, obviously, Joe Burrow in Cincinnati, Lamar Jackson in Baltimore. But there's two up here in the AFC East who are being skewered and fricasseed. Obviously, Mac Jones, he talked about him on the show. But the other one is Zach Wilson. I've heard people talk this week about Zach Wilson being done as a quarterback in the NFL. My question to you, this has been a year of knee-jerk and instant gratification in the NFL. Are we putting too much pressure, expectation on some of these young quarterbacks?
Oh, there's no question there's all that. It's understandable why there is, but there definitely is that. And I think that's where teams have to be careful sometimes of when they put guys out there, and especially the young guys, are they truly ready to handle everything that is thrown at them? And is the team good enough around them to succeed? And, I mean, heck, there were people saying after last year that everyone was questioning Trevor Lawrence. Mm-hmm. I'm saying, whoa, tap the brakes just a little bit. And so, but the problem is when the guy does have some failure and – then it's in your mind and it's in your head. And so a lot of times it's tough to rebound from that. And when the team isn't great around you and then you put out another guy, a guy like a Mike White or something who plays a lot better, and then all of a sudden that ratchets it up. and the player's thinking, oh, my goodness, am I ever going to play well? And you lose your confidence. And, man, I mean, we know how tough a position it is to play. And I don't know what happens, you know, to Zach Wilson. I think Mac Jones is certainly looking to be at least in a better place right now than Zach Wilson is. But still, I mean, you'd think whatever – now, whatever was seen in the guy to make them a high first-round pick, it's hard to believe that it was all wrong. But the other side of that is that you never know how a guy is going to react until he gets to the NFL, because it's a whole different world than college football, a whole different world. And so, you just, like I said, when those lights come on in the NFL, you just don't know how the guy is going to react. But you have to have the feel as a coach to know when is the right time to put that guy out there. And if you do it a little bit too early, you know, I've always had the feeling, well, get him out there. Let him play. Get him the experience, because it's better to get it out of the way as early as possible. But if the experience becomes really bad, then that can be really, really difficult to come back from. And, you know, we'll see what happens to both these guys as we go down the road. But like I said, I think Jones right now is in a better place, you know, than Wilson. But it's – you know, the jury's still out in terms of how good or how much they will put. You know, Jones has less area to go to improve. Wilson has a lot more, and we'll have to wait and see whether they can achieve it.
Howard, once again, Tuesday on the NFL Network, you're the Hall of Fame finalists.
Yes, Tuesday at 8 p.m. on NFL Network. And so, you know, there is one note I wanted to mention real quick, as we got off Franco there. You know, a little bit. I'll give everybody a little preview of Hard Knocks tonight, because Sean Jefferson, who is the Cardinals receivers coach, and also the father, by the way, of Van Jefferson, who plays wide receiver for the Rams. So in a team meeting last week after Franco passed, he put up the film of the Immaculate Reception in the meeting room with the receivers. And Jefferson says to the players, Franco Harris was a bad boy. This guy was a beast, man, a beast. On that Immaculate Reception, he was probably in the right spot in some area, right where he was supposed to be able to get that. Well, of course, we all know from what Franco has said, he got it from Joe Paterno, who always yep. told him, when the ball's thrown downfield and you're back in the – don't just stand back there waiting to see what happens. Run down the field. And that's what he did. And then Jefferson continued, if he'd been loafing on that play, never would have got there. This is one of our heroes, guys. Big time, man. Pull up his credentials. That's what Jefferson says to the guys in his room. Pull up his credentials. I want to show what type of bad boy he was. So Marquise Brown is sitting there on his phone, and he's going, it says he's a four-time Super Bowl champion. And Jefferson says, keep reading. And Brown says, offensive rookie of the year. First team all pro, 2-time second team, 9-time Pro Bowl, NFL rushing touchdowns leader, 1970s all decade team. Didn't even mention Pro Football Hall of Fame. And then Jefferson says, I'll tell you, but then he said the key thing is what we were talking about, not the key thing, but a big part, what we were talking about with J.J. Watt. Jefferson then said, I'll tell you about this man, NFL man of the year, right? That tells you he cares about people. I thank him for paving the way for me, for all of you, really. God rest his soul. Then he says four times as he's going to sit down, bad man, bad man, bad man, bad man. And then he finishes by saying to the players, all those Christmas gifts you're getting people this year, that money, thank him for it. That'll be on Hard Knocks tonight.
Thanks for the preview. That's some powerful stuff, Howard. That's awesome. Can't wait to see it. He is a Hall of Fame selector. He is a co-host of a weekly Hall of Fame radio show on Sirius XM NFL Radio, and he covers the Arizona Cardinals and the NFL for PHNX, and he's a pleasure, and it's a joy to have him on our show. A pleasure to be with him always. Howard Balzer, thank you for your time so much today. And ringing the new year, well, have a great football weekend, and we'll talk again next week, sir. Stay safe.
We will do that, guys, and one quick thing for the Hall of Fame show tonight. Tony Dungy was on, talking about his experience with Franco when he was a player and a coach in Pittsburgh. And then Joe had a great story, believe it or not, about Joe Biden and his experience with Franco Harris. It's really, really some great stuff. So 10 p.m. Eastern tonight on Sirius NFL Radio.
Howard, thank you so much. Always appreciate your time, sir. Be well.
All right, guys. Have a good new year. Take care.
You as well.
Thanks, Howard.
Great stuff, as always. And I'm just going to say it for you. That may have been my favorite interview of all year with Howard Balzer. I love turning the clock back. Stories. That's what it's all about. Sit on a campfire, listening to stories if you want. Be that as it may. Paint that picture. Cliche it, if you will. But Howard Balzer, always a pleasure to have him on our podcast every Wednesday at 7 p.m. during the football season. So we will touch base with him next week as well. Lou is on hold from New Jersey, but let's go to our third co-host who joins us here after doing some family stuff and what have you. He is Mr. John Crow. JC, how are you, baby?
Oh, not too bad. Happy Wednesday to you both. And, damn, I wish I was doing some family stuff. Just get my ass kicked with some physical therapy. That's all, folks.
Well, it's family-related.
Great stuff with Howard, guys.
And getting better, JC, that's all that matters, you know. No pain, no gain, as they say.
Exactly right.
Anyway, JC, good to have you, boys. No, I appreciate that. Good stuff. Wish you can join us, but we will have more times with him. But I just wanted to get your thoughts going into on the page. Before Lou and Lou, I just want to get JC's thoughts on what happened last week and what the prognosis is, because, you know, that the dissension keeps going on. People keep talking out. And as crazy as it is, when we bring Lou on, there's a big tie-in with the Patriots and the Jets going into this weekend with a Patriot team, JC, that is unraveled again, and it's like basically shoveled dirt upon by the media and fans here, but still can make the playoffs.
Isn't that crazy?
Yeah.
But the thing is, can they actually take advantage of the situation?
Do they want to take advantage of the situation? It's real.
All right, with that being said, let's bring in Lou from New Jersey. Lou, thanks for holding. How are you, buddy?
Yeah. Let's put this way. Gee, I hope not. Speaking of the Patriots, they're making the playoffs. You know,
Lou,
I'm
listen
the Patriots,
to me. Lou,
fellas.
Lou, right. You're in great position. Because all you need to do is have the Patriots lose one of the next two to Miami or Buffalo.
Yes.
So you can still get in. With all that's going on, and Mike White, and Mike White's back, Lou.
That's a plus. That's a plus sign right there.
So let's see if you have to put the spring training jerseys away and keep the Jets jerseys on. So next 2 weeks we'll let you know.
Right. I mean, with Mike White, that should be better as long as he can stay healthy. Because you know, with Zaggy Boy, you know, injured and playing like the way he's been playing. Trust me, White is the better option.
I agree with you.
Or going better, you can go with Vanna White. No. Oh, okay. All right. Or we can go with Betty White. No.
Kind of roll, though, Lou.
I know. I've been practicing that all week.
Lou, say what you want, but at least one of your New York teams can guarantee a playoff spot this week. With a win, the New York Giants are in.
Yeah, but they had the game in the bag last week, and then at the last second, whoops. Now, who would have thought it was going to be a 61-yard field goal, even from the Vikings? But still, that was a tough one to, you know, take. And, you know, my family were watching it in the Giant game, and we were, like, in shock. I'm like, there's no way it's going to hit this. Like, I don't believe it.
Well,
the immaculate reception, this was the immaculate field goal.
Well, the Minnesota Viking kicker made it because it was regular season. It's not like it's the postseason, so.
A win's a win, a loss is a loss, especially this time of year.
All right, Lou. Yeah.
So I call it the immaculate field goal.
you know what I think? And going into that game, as we talked about on our Sunday show, and JC, you can chime in on this as well as Joe, Lou, is that I think the rest of the year, we're going to find out just – where Daniel Jones sits as the quarterback, he's going to be the guy. And we needed to see more from Barkley. I think we saw a little bit more from them. But I was impressed by Jones's play. I think Jones may have solidified himself because I think the questions came into this year, What kind of quarterback is he? How good is he going to be? Is he the guy for the future? And he made a big step in his say in what's going to go on next year. I think Daniel Jones really stepped up to the plate, so to speak.
Yeah. You need Jones to step up more, and Saquon has to, keep his game up too. That's what's going to, make them better.
Agreed.
I tell you what, Lou, for the money involved with both of them, I think there's a better chance Jones is back than Barkley, because they're not going to want to spend $20 million plus on Barkley.
No.
Right. No, probably not. Yeah.
Lou, no show, I know that. I know you're going to be resuming soon. Tell people, when are you going to resume doing the podcast? I know you're off for the holidays.
January 7th, we don't know what the format's going to be yet, or it might stay the same for that week. So as we get closer to it, I will let you know. The number would still be the same on that week, 512-543-4662-4-6. Any further developments, we will keep everybody posted.
Sounds good. That's Lou from New Jersey calling Joe. You bet, man. Joe, if you have him on the screen, I've lost my screen, so just double check and get him off there, if you would. All right, very good. Excellent. Anyway, all right, going old school show. The three of us are here. Chips, Crow, and Joe here for you. 7:46 p.m. on December 28th of 2022. We talked a little football with Howard. We always welcome him joining us. But, guys, playoff picture, it's a good time of year, man. It's going to come right down to the wire, and it starts tomorrow night with a Tennessee team, 8 more guys not playing, and you talk about the King Henry, who is basically has half their touches on the offensive side of the ball with the rookie quarterback, and now it looks doubtful that Derrick Henry does not play. And if you're the Jacksonville Jaguars, you are sitting pretty, JC.
Yeah, and you know what? I love the way Doug Peterson came out and said there is no such thing as a meaningless game. I guess he's just forgetting about all those times with the Eagles where he did play a meaningless game and sat his guys and cost the Giants a playoff spot. But anyway, I like the way he's thinking this week for week 17. Keep your guys fresh. Keep your guys with the mentality you want to keep winning. Keep it rolling. Whereas Tennessee and Mike Vrabel – it's just a disaster with Henry, how banged up he is, whether it is just a rest, they're going to rest some starters. Maybe they just don't think they can beat Dallas, and they want the excuse going into 10 days of rest in Jacksonville next week. But, hey, I'm rooting for the Jaguars. I don't know about you guys, but go Jags, man.
Get up.
I like to see the Jaguars win. It's like, look, Tennessee – I like Tennessee. I'm nothing against them, but injuries have caught up to them. Tannehill is a good quarterback, but he can't play if he's hurt. And it's, and I love it when Howell was saying that. The question in Vrabel, Vrabel's job's not in jeopardy. I'm like, you gotta be kidding if Vrabel's job's in jeopardy. The guy's done a great job down there in Tennessee, and they're gonna question him because he's had injury after injury this year. Like, come on.
Guys, I have a conspiracy theorist I want to share with you. Jared Stidham, old friend Jared Stidham, gets the start this weekend for the Raiders. Derek Carr benched, finally. Conspiracy theory is, I think if there's one team, and I don't think he's going to play next year. I'll be right up front about that. I think I said it before. I think TB12 calls it quits. My conspiracy theory is, if he does play, that's the one team I see him going to. Because it's not a team that has to mortgage with a young team having a mortgage period to bring a guy like Brady and like the Patriots, like Miami to bring him in, and maybe a team that's looking for a quarterback for the future. I think the Raiders fit into the perfect category because you get Carr out there. Carr's not the answer, we know. Stidham's probably not the answer. We don't know that as well. But Brady can step into the Raiders with the Raiders and play a year or two. And it's not going to stunt their growth because they're going to be in the quarterback market anyway. Tom TB12 takes his foot off the gas starting this week in a pivotal game, which may decide the, in spite of division in the NFC, takes his foot off the gas and preserves his 45-year-old body and enables him to go to Las Vegas to play next year with old friend Josh McDaniels. JC, your thoughts. Am I crazy?
I'll give you two. No, no, you're not crazy. I'll give you two things that will kind of go to, you know, in the positive direction for the conspiracy theory. One, we all know Dana White said it was a done deal of Tom Brady going to Vegas until
yep.
John Gruden put the whole, you know, kibosh on it. And two, what better way than to go to a possibly disgruntled wide receiver in Davante Adams, you know, squash that by saying, hey, I know your friend is, you know, is leaving because, you know, he sucks, but we're bringing in Tom Brady. He's not going to say no to that. So, you know, you can squash some things. I think, you know, like you always say, Chips, where there's smoke, there's fire. And I totally, totally buy into that. You know, if not him, Jimmy Garoppolo is going to be on the market. So, you know, hey, maybe Josh will go after Cliff Kingsbury and make him act the quarterback when Kingsbury is fired in Arizona for this another dismal season. You know, because that's all Josh is doing. He's just getting as many Patriot quarterbacks as he can out there and put them all in and see what works. Because this year has been an ultimate failure in his first one in Las Vegas. He's just lucky that the Waltons own the Broncos and not the Raiders. Otherwise, mm-hmm. he'd be joining Hackett on, you know, on the unemployment line.
Oh, hey, Cam Newton's out there, too. Don't forget him.
There you go.
And, no. You know, in Las Vegas, go ahead, Joe. You want to say something?
No, go ahead, John.
I was going to say, in Las Vegas now, and I was talking to my buddy who's a big, likes the Las Vegas Knights. There's a standard of excellence now in Las Vegas on the sports scene. You had the Aces. It's the WNBA win their championship in the WNBA championship. You have the Las Vegas Knights, who have really in 4 years really have been a gold standard in 4 years for teams that have success in the Western Conference, going to the finals their first year, done what no other expansion team has done, having gone through a couple of coaching changes because they're not going to settle for anything less in Las Vegas with the Knights and on Frozen Pond. And I think there's a stigma there. There's an aura where you need to win in this town to be successful. I mean, you need to achieve success in order to have consistency with the coaches. In other words, JC, I think McDaniels, and it's only 1 year, he may have to win next year or he's on the hot seat because of the standard in Sin City on a whole.
Yeah, and let us not forget, soon coming to the Strip, courtesy of John Henry and the Fenway Sports Group, will be LeBron James and the expansion franchise team for the NBA. So, yeah, there's going to be another layer of you have to keep that entertainment alive. It has to be the top of the line. That's what Vegas has always been about, whether it be in the casinos, the shows, whatever. And now, because of the gambling being so prevalent with fantasy football and sports betting books all over the country, now it's all legal. So now you have sports franchises in the city. So, yeah, you're right. They have to win. It's just a matter of how quickly now. Because, again, with Mark Davis, there's the caveat. Because
yep.
you would think after all these years they'd have all that money, but they really don't. That's, you know, a little cookie there. But otherwise, Josh will get it figured out. I don't have any qualms about that. He'll get it fixed. His problem is that division, man. Your Chiefs, Chips, the Chargers are actually playing up the potential.
Yep.
And you know somebody's going to go into Denver and make them better than they are this year. They have to be better. They can't be any worse than what Russell Wilson gave them this year. So, yeah, the pressure's on. They got to win.
Yeah. Look, I like Oakland. I'm L.A. Josh McDaniels is going to need a quarterback, definitely going to need a quarterback. And they're in desperate. Stidham's not the answer. Obviously, Carr's on the trading block. Do they get him in the draft or they get him through free agency or does Tommy Boy? But I don't see them moving forward if they get Tom there next year. That's not moving forward. I'm sorry, but just that talk's going to stop.
Joe,
how about
I don't think
this
they have
for
to...
a 1B plan?
Go ahead, Joe. Yep, go ahead.
Would you on either the Raiders side or the Packers side do a car for Rodgers switch?
No.
Joe,
no, I'd rather have Jordan Love than Derek Carr any day of the week. I'd rather see that Jordan Love than Derek Carr any day, every day, all day. No offense. I've never been a Derek Carr fan. So it's like you might as well put David Carr in there as quarterback.
I'm not, you know, that's intriguing only because I believe in this, and this is one thing I've always, you know, always talked about in nauseam. I always believe with athletes, and in this case, Derek Carr, a change of scenery can do wonders. And if you're the Packers, I mean, if you're the Raiders, you bring in a Rodgers or a Brady, I don't think you need, you're not trying to build on anything. I think what you're doing is just to draft a young quarterback, and if Brady's there for a year or two or Rodgers there for a year or two, you can tutor that quarterback that you have for a couple of years. Because with the Raiders and with Adams there and Josh Jacobs and Chandler Jones, it's a win-now mentality in Las Vegas. And Brady can get you to that win-now mentality, and you can follow it up with a younger guy, be it through the draft or be it through free agency. So I'm not as out on you, Joe, as with Jordan Love being the guy with Derek Carr, only because, based on the Solis, that I just think that change of scenery can do worlds of wonders for any athlete.
All right, so, John, change of scenery, I'll put it this way. An interception is an interception is an interception. Going to the wrong team comes naturally for Derek Carr. No offense, comes naturally. They were playing the Patriots. Just that flip pass that he threw to Marcus Jones was all I need to know to show you of just his mentality and what he thinks. No.
You don't think the pressure's on Derek Carr more so now with the Raiders and the weapons that he had? And if he goes to Green Bay, some of that pressure's off?
It's even worse in Green Bay for the pressure because you're replacing what they consider a legend in Green Bay.
Not with the team he has around him. The team he had around him in Vegas was built to go to, you know, to compete with the Chiefs to win that division. It's not the same in Green Bay because they don't have the weapons there. They're sort of on a different renaissance, if you will.
Wait. Don't be the announcers. Don't be apologists for Aaron Rodgers. He's got some good rookies there, some good players, and they keep on blaming the receivers for him having an off year. No. And maybe he's playing through injuries, and he's just not the quarterback he was.
I got you. I'm not an apologist for Aaron Rodgers. I just say with the change of scenery, Rodgers is not going to be there. I think if you put Rodgers, with Josh Jacobs and back with Davante Adams with the Raiders, they're competing with the Chiefs right now for that division. I just wouldn't think of the same in Green Bay. But be that as it may, that's how we talk here on the show. It's good stuff. JC, I wanted to get your thoughts, and Joe, I'll follow up with you here on the Going Old 2 show approaching 8 o'clock. A little bit more time left in the show. But, JC, we're talking about the cloud of suspicion with the Miami Dolphins now with a quarterback in Tua Tagovailoa who is now we're looking at as with his third concussion this season. And with all the scrutiny with the organization, and Joe and I talked about it a little bit with Howard, I think now we got to look at the player and maybe a player who in Tua we may never, ever see his potential because of this concussion problem, which may linger for quite some time and may derail his career before it even starts.
Yeah, I mean, you got to look at it, you know, start internally. You know, one, who's looking out for the player? You know, it's certainly not the player himself. You know, he can't help himself. He didn't report symptoms until Monday. So, obviously, nobody field-wise for the Dolphins nor the league, that spotter didn't find that, you know, him hitting his head again.
Mm-hmm.
And you would think any little thing with the history, and I know Dolphins fans, Dolphins media, Dolphins organization members, they're quick to say, well, he doesn't. It's not the third time he's in concussion protocol. It's only two, because remember, it was a back injury against Buffalo, which is a bunch of malarkey. We all know he hit his head against the field and the turf, and he had a concussion in addition to the back injury. But anytime you're quick to point to little details instead of looking at the bigger picture, you know you're trying to cover up something. And I'll be honest with you. if the NFL is here for player safety, there's no way that Tua plays another down the rest of the year.
Thank you.
You have to protect the player for his, not only for his football future, but how about just for his life future?
Mm-hmm.
We've all seen guys who had concussions, didn't report them, and see where they are in not only their 50s, but their 40s, and how much it hurts. We all lived through Junior Seau's tragic death in CTE. The NFL has to stop giving it lip service and actually be about player safety. And if they can't do it, the Dolphins have to. But as we've seen this week, they have no clue what's going on. And, you know, Monday's press conference with Mike McDaniel was laughable about him reporting, I don't know. That's what they told me. You know, how about you go ask? How about you go talk to Tua? You go talk to the doctors. Be proactive instead of, I don't know, I'm just a head coach. I'm doing, you know, whatever the medical people tell me to do. At some point, it's going to get better. And I ask you this, Joe. Are we really in 2022 looking at a league that has to have a tragedy happen on the field in order for them to wake up?
Well, yeah. And it's like, you know, look, they had this on sports radio, and they were all over the coach of, like, I didn't see it. Well, if you're the coach, you're watching the game, and you see him hit his head somewhere, somehow. And any little time, especially with him, with Tua.
You have a severe concussion. It doesn't take much to get another concussion. And I'm with you, JC. No. Get him off the field for the rest of the year, even including playoffs. If they make the playoffs, keep him off the field for his own health. Protect him from himself, never mind from getting hit hard. And just follow protocol that you supposedly – you're so vigilant about these hitting defenseless receivers, but yet when a quarterback goes down, he hits his head, you look the other way because, oh, well, he didn't report it to anybody. Oh, he didn't feel any symptoms. Concussions, you don't possibly don't feel any symptoms. How's 7 for 13 with 3 picks after you went down when you were 10 for 13? You may have not felt anything, but he exactly wasn't playing that well neither, and that's not Tua-like. And so the NFL ought to hang their heads and bury themselves if it takes a tragic accident like that for them to finally react. Be proactive, not reactive. Don't give lip service. It's all about making millions and millions of dollars. End of discussion.
Joe, that's a great point. I want to hit on that. But, JC, are we going to wait till it's tragedy? Well, it leads to think that the NFL will do something after something happens because that's what they've been in the word, reactionary. That's it. This is what we've known as the NFL now. We'll shoot first, ask questions later, so to speak, if you want to talk about any sort of metaphor or anything. But, Joe, that's a great point. And with concussions, are the symptoms the same in every sort of individual, much less player? So do we have to know more about concussions? Do we have to learn more about the effects, about some of the symptoms? You know, because one player has these symptoms, does it mean the other player going to have the exact same symptoms? So is it about education? One thing's for sure, guys, I'll start with you, JC, that the concussion protocol, in my opinion, may change on a year-to-year basis. Or maybe this year we've seen it change during the season. I can't see that ending anytime soon, JC, and I think that's going to be an ongoing theme in the NFL, and it may lead to a tragic event on the field.
You know, it's a great point, Chips, in that, you know, the first words out of a lot of media members' mouths on Monday was, well, how could he be in the concussion protocol? Nobody spotted it on the field, and how did he get there? And that's very curious, you know, and then they're quick to delve into that instead of the bigger picture. And they're making it up as they go along because they want to be able to say, well, we didn't screw that up on game day. Our operations worked as it should, when it really has failed so many times this year. We've seen it ourselves with the Patriots and Devontae Parker. If not for Nelson Agholor, he probably would have stayed on the field and got hit again. It's been 3 weeks since Devontae Parker has hit the field.
Yep.
3 weeks. The average length in the NFL this year is 9 days that someone stays in concussion protocol. Marcus Jones for the Patriots landed on it today. Why today? Now you go back and you look at the film, why he was down so long. Nobody kept him off the field.
Yep.
Maybe he was a little concussed. Maybe that's why a guy with such sure hands muffs that punt. I don't know.
Yep.
So it's getting to the point where we're going the wrong way. We're starting with what happens and going backwards.
Exactly.
Instead of trying to be a league that goes forward. And if I were them, I would make a phone call to Chris Nowinski, the former WWE wrestler. He founded the Boston University CTE Center. The dude knows more about concussions than any of us on the planet will ever know.
Mm-hmm.
He knows his stuff. Bring him in. Listen to him. Get the best doctors. Put him around. And then make it. Don't try to make a protocol that what it is to kind of wrap around into how can we get this guy back on the field in 6 days? Because that shouldn't even be a possibility.
Yep.
And believe me, the NFL's not the only one at fault. You look at any Major League Baseball game, you see a catcher or an umpire get nailed by a 100-mile-per-hour, you know, foul ball.
Yep.
They come out, they look at him, it's fine. Put him right back out there. That has always blown my mind. No, take them out. They have probably had more concussions by catchers and umpires that have gone undetected than we'll ever know.
Mm-hmm.
But the thing is, who's going to move this forward? It's certainly not Roger Goodell. You know, guy's smart businessman. But when it comes to stuff like this, it's just that's not what he, you know, it's not his forte. And to ask him to do it is, you know, asking kind of the impossible. So, and I ask you, Joe, I ask you, Chips, steps up. At one point, do the players, and I really feel this, it's going to have to be them when they decide not to play that any of this is going to change.
Yep. Go ahead, Joe.
No, what's gonna make him change isn't current plays, JC, is now comes to the forefront of former plays, a.k.a. Ted Johnson, guys that played and have had severe head injuries who probably have CTE because Ted Johnson would be the first one to tell you he played reckless and abandoned football. He would jump off the line and meet the running back head first in air. And it's like he had no problems doing it. And guys of his era had no problems doing it. What's going to make the NFL change their mind is having these guys speak up and band together to speak up to get them to change. Because they're not going to. These guys are making – you're talking about millions, billions of dollars made on both sides, players and or owners and everything else in between. Unfortunately – some guy down, not getting up, transported to the hospital off the field, will get them to change their mind, and I don't want to see that.
The crazy thing is, and this is my final thought, guys. I'll leave the rest up to you. Unless you change the game of football, we're going to be talking about this more than we even want. Number one. Number two is, I think JC, to start, you're going to need to bring in someone from an outside entity, be it science, be it someone who has nothing to do with the business aspect of football, i.e. maybe not getting paid by the league, but has just the players, just people, just human beings at the forefront of whatever they investigate, whatever they want to perform, or whatever their thoughts are. It has to be in the best interest of the people, the person, the human being, and not the business of the NFL. Because there are studies out there, guys, and they were squashed a few years ago about – I think you mentioned doctors in Boston, John, be it Harvard Medical, be it Boston University, where they could detect CTE in the brain of a player who was still alive as opposed to waiting through an autopsy after his death. And that's where we're going to need to start. Get ahead of the curve, JC, like you said, because there's ways to get there, but we need to have the foresight and the gumption and the wherewithal to maybe put the game on the back burner, if you will, and it's not going to lose the popularity, at least not long term, but to put these individuals and these men and women or people, and I'm just talking NFL here, who are at risk because it's their livelihood and their lives that go beyond what they are on the gridiron and its players that we really need to focus on. And when we can do that, when we come to some sort of realization, maybe we can bring it all into focus. That's my thought, man, because there's a lot we need to do and a lot we can do to just make the game better, maybe make the game safer without changing it, but put these guys and their livelihoods and their lives on the forefront. JC.
Let me ask you this as my final thought on this. Do you think as a whole, as a majority, NFL fans are ready to accept a player being taken off the field as a precaution, maybe in a Super Bowl, costing their team a possible victory? Are they willing to accept that for the safety of the player?
I don't know, JC. Ask the New England Patriots, who should have had one guy in the Seattle Super Bowl taken off the field concussion. Because Julian Edelman, if he wasn't concussed, then nobody ever was because he was wobbly, woozy, you name it, and he was seeing stars. So, yes, it's going to come to the point where you're going to have guys taken off the field in games of games, and so be it. If it has to come to that, it has to come to that. Think about it. We always grew up, and they always said every play in the NFL was like a train wreck, like two trains colliding. That was 20 years ago. Guys have gotten stronger, faster, better, more physical. So what's it now? It's like that's two huge trains colliding every play, and they're taking away a lot of the physicality, and it's still like colliding. So there's no way to avoid this. So precaution is going to be the only way to go, and it's going to have to become the new norm, whether they like it or not. You're going to have to protect these guys and their livelihood and for their lives. You're going to have to start taking guys off, whether they want to or not.
The simple answer to that question, JC, no, they're not going to accept it. Not if you go cold turkey, if you will. Gradually, maybe, but no. And that's going to be the crux of it all. That's going to be the breaking point. That's going to be the turning point in maybe the league, maybe the sport, maybe the industry. But right now, if you were to say that as we're talking, the fans are not going to accept it. It's just, to me, that's a no-brainer about how they're going to react. Any final thoughts, boys?
No, I mean, you're right. And, you know, fans are definitely a part of this. And, you know, until we reach that point, we're as culpable as the guys running the game.
Wait.
Good point.
So the third one in that conversation, forget the owners, forget the players, forget the fans. The fantasy sports billion-dollar business will have a lot to say about that.
No question. Guys, it's been a pleasure. That was some really good talk in the last half of this, the last 10 minutes or so. That's something we can pick up on. Well, I'll do a show on that if you want, about the ins and outs and the business part and the human aspect of it all. But always appreciate your time, man. JC, thanks for calling in. I'm glad you survived your physical therapy because indirectly, that was family time, dude, because you're doing that for your family, brother.
There you go. But before we sign off, I have to get you on the record. Are we here next Wednesday still talking about a possible Patriots playoff?
Joe?
Yes. I think we get even with Miami and win Sunday. I think we can do enough to win.
I agree. I say yes, too. I think they beat Miami. There's a lot too much going on and with Miami. The Tua stuff on and off the field, we just talked about it. And the fact is they aren't playing well now. And we've seen this in a cup, you know, see what you want about the Dolphins. The past few years, they've been a decent team, and they've been doing this at this time of year. Get off to get a horrible start, maybe win some games, but tail off towards the end. And they're doing it right now, man, and they're doing it in a bad way as a team. And I think, yeah, I think, JC, a little pressure on McDaniels. We'll never see it because he seems to be that coy guy. But next Wednesday, we will be talking about the final week of the season, Patriots and Buffalo, where the Patriots having a chance to get into the playoffs, as crazy as it sounds. I can't wait to be with you guys. And, again, always a pleasure. Joe, John, appreciate your time, man, as always. Have a great night.
Enjoy.
All right. Thanks to Howard Balzer for joining us here on the Going Old School show. Check into phnx.com. Go on to his Twitter at hbalzer721, and he floats out a couple of these articles, which are free to the public, and it's some good stuff about the Cardinals, about the NFL, and just his thoughts and his perspective, being a 47-year veteran of covering the NFL, that he sees through his eyes. And we have the pleasure of having him on every week on there on the Going Old School podcast. For Chips, I'm sorry, I am Chips. For Joe, for JC, and thanks to Lou, guys, joining us, for those guys, thank you all for joining us on the Going Old School show. When we next be with you, it'll be Sunday morning, 10 a.m. in some way, shape, or form to preview the Sunday and Monday's action in the NFL. Until then, folks, take care, stay well, happy and safe New Year. Be well and be safe, my friends. Thank you for using